Angel rested her forearms on the stone and listened. Smiling at her, Michael bent over the side and joined Miriam, his deep voice harmonizing. Angel had never heard anything more beautiful than the way Miriam's and Michael's voices blended. "Oh, doesn't it sound wonderful?" Miriam laughed. "Let's do another. If you put your head down far enough, the sound is all around you. Sing with us this time, Amanda, and it'll be even better." She wouldn't accept no for an answer. "Don't tell me you can't. You can. If you don't know the words, just open your mouth and go, ah. Rock of Ages again. You've heard it enough to know a few words." Angel joined in hesitantly. Before they were finished, the rest of the children were hanging over the well and singing down into it. Had Michael not caught hold of her dress, Ruth would have fallen in head first. "Oh, Susanna, this time," Andrew said. From that they went on to more road songs with funny verses. Laughing, they straightened. Miriam's expression changed markedly, and her hand gripped Angel's. "Paul's coming." Heart sinking, Angel raised her head and saw him walking across the open field toward them. "He was so stiff when I invited him, I didn't think he would come," Miriam said. Angel had never seen a more grim-looking man. "I'd better go greet him, or he'll leave before he's arrived," Miriam said. Paul watched Miriam come toward him and steeled himself. She was wearing the yellow dress again. When she smiled, a muscle jerked in his cheek. "I'm so glad you came, Paul." She smiled and fanned herself with her hand. "It's hot, isn't it? Come, have some cider." Too disturbed by what he felt when he looked at Miriam, Paul glanced around. Angel was looking at him. He gave her a sardonic smile, expecting her to smile back just as derisively. She didn't. He hated her so much he could taste it. "When did you finish your planting?" Miriam asked, forcing his attention back to her. "Yesterday afternoon." They reached the others. Michael greeted him with a handshake. His grip was firm, speaking of continued affection. He put his arm around Angel and drew her close against his side, waiting. Angel's blue eyes flickered as she looked up at him. "Hello, Paul," she said. Paul wanted to ignore her, but he knew he couldn't without offending Michael. "Amanda," he said, and nodded. Her face showed no emotion whatsoever. It didn't surprise him. What would she know about feelings? Miriam had come back with a tin cup and was watching the exchange closely. She handed him the cider and took Angel's hand. "Mandy, would you help me hide the clues to the treasure hunt?" Paul watched them go off together, hand in hand. "Miriam's pretty, isn't she?" Michael said, smiling slightly. "Those dark eyes." Paul drank his cider in taut silence. He hadn't expected Michael to notice so soon. When the children ran off to find Miriam's clues to the treasure, a basket of berry tarts, Elizabeth, Miriam, and Angel set up the plank table in the yard. Angel had brought a Dutch oven full of venison, baked beans, and candied carrots. Elizabeth had roasted two fat pheasants that were stuffed with seasoned bread. Miriam brought out two winter apple pies. Angel was too aware of the undercurrent of hatred aimed at her from Paul to join in the jubilance. She was successful in avoiding him throughout the afternoon, but now she was seated opposite him at the table. John said grace, and when she raised her head, she encountered Paul's look. She understood all too clearly the message in his eyes. "You? Praying? What a laugh." She was a hypocrite. She bowed her head as all the others did, pretending to pray even while she held no part of it. Nor did she want to. She did it because it would hurt Michael for her to sit beside him, back rigid and head held high while grace was said. And it would embarrass the Altmans. Ruthie would ask questions. She held Paul's cold gaze. Can't you understand? If anything, he looked even more contemptuous. Resigned that he never would understand her, probably would never even try, she took a slice of pheasant and passed the platter. "Do you want me to talk to Paul?" Michael asked her later, when John was fiddling and he was dancing with her. "No," she said, afraid she would be the cause of an even wider gulf between the two men. She had done enough damage already. "He's a decent man, Amanda. He stood by me through some hard times. He's confused right now." She knew Paul wasn't confused. He was full of a righteous rage and animosity. Because of her. He was hurting. Because of her. Why hadn't she thought past her own revenge that day? Couldn't she have ignored his insults? She had known he was jealous. She had known that he thought she wasn't good enough to be Michael's wife. She had known a lot of things about Paul on first sight. "Be patient with him," Michael said. As Michael had been patient with her. She would swallow her pride if need be. For Michael's sake, she would take whatever Paul had to throw at her. Michael danced with Miriam, and Angel went to pour herself a cup of cider. Paul came to stand next to her, his dark eyes glinting. He nodded toward Michael, whirling Miriam around. They were both laughing. "They look good together, don't they?" Angel watched Miriam and felt the pang inside her. They did. "They like each other a great deal," she said, and poured a second cup of cider. She held it out to him. Smiling mockingly down at her, he took it. He watched Michael and Miriam again. "She should have come a few months earlier. Things would have been a lot different."
"Michael said it wouldn't have."
"Of course he'd say that." The sword thrust went deep. Angel didn't say anything. Paul's mouth curved sardonically. "I heard you were working in a general mercantile. What were you selling?"
"A little of everything."
"Just like always, hmm?" Angel concealed her pain and spoke quietly.
"I've no intention of hurting Michael again, Paul. I swear to you."
"But you will, won't you? It's in your nature. You'll suck him dry and then throw the empty husk away. Oh, you'll stay around for a while, just for appearances, and when the going gets rough, you'll pack up your bags and be on your merry way again." Angel blinked and looked away. She couldn't breathe past the constriction in her chest.
"I won't."
"No? Then why were you in such a hurry to get back to paradise? Why did you run off to Sacramento?"
"I'm sticking this time."
"For a year or two, until you're bored with being a farmer's wife."
He drank his cider and set the cup down. He watched Michael and Miriam with a frown.
"You know, Angel, I haven't seen Michael smile like that in a long, long time."
He walked away and stood with John. Angel held her cup of cider clasped between her two hands. Raising her head, she watched the two people she loved most in the world dancing together, and wondered if Paul wasn't right about everything. Chapter 25. From 1 Kings, chapter 19, verse 12. "And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a still, small voice." Paul sought to erode Angel's confidence every time they met, while Angel set herself to endure whatever he threw at her. She told herself each time he made a cutting remark or insulting prophecy about where she would be in 10 years that she would make no retaliation. To fight back would only hurt Michael, and it wouldn't change how Paul felt about her. Whatever tomorrow brought, today she had Michael. Angel refused to defend herself against Paul. What was the point? She was polite. She was silent. She stood firm, even when she wanted to run away and hide in a dark place where she could curl into a tight ball. I'm not a harlot anymore. I'm not. But the way Paul looked at her made her remember and feel she still was, no matter what she did. 1 year did not erase 10, and Paul brought back the dark years with Duke, the years of fear and loneliness and survival. And because of it, Paul's abuse drove her further into Michael's arms. The harder Paul tried to drive her away, the tighter she held to what she had. Michael told her not to be anxious about tomorrow, and she concentrated upon wringing the life out of each moment with him. He told her not to be afraid, and she wasn't, as long as he was with her. Michael loved her now, and that was all that mattered to her. He made her life meaningful and filled it with new and wondrous things. Though life was hard work, from dawn to dusk, he somehow made it exciting. He opened her mind to things she hadn't noticed before, and a quiet voice in her head said over and over, "Come forth, beloved." Come forth from what? She couldn't get enough of Michael. He filled her mind and heart. He was her life. He awakened her before dawn with kisses, and they lay in the quiet darkness, listening to the symphony of crickets and bullfrogs and the wind chimes. Her body trembled at his touch and sang at his possession. Every moment of every day with him was precious to her. Spring brought a wildness of color. Bright splashes of golden poppies and purple lupines stained the green hillsides and unplowed meadowlands. Michael talked about King Solomon and how, even with all his riches, he could not clothe himself as God clothed the hillsides with simple wildflowers. "I'm not going to plow that section," Michael told her. "I'm going to leave it the way it is." Michael saw God in everything. He saw him in the wind and the rain and the earth. He saw him in the crops that were growing. He saw God in the nature of the animals that inhabited their land. He saw him in the flames of their evening fire. Angel only saw Michael and worshipped him. When he read aloud in the evenings before the fire, she lost herself in the deep resonance of his voice. The words washed over her like a warm, heavy wave and swept back into a distant sea. Jonathan scaling a cliff to rout the Philistines. David, a shepherd boy, killing a 9-foot giant named Goliath. Jesus raising the dead. Lazarus, come forth. Come forth. Michael made nonsense sound like poetry. She took the Bible and put it back on the mantel. "Love me," she said, taking his hand. And Michael could do nothing else. Elizabeth came with the children. "Paul told us about a town not 10 miles from here. It's not very big and has little to offer, but they've driven in to get supplies." Angel noticed the small bulge of Elizabeth's abdomen. She offered coffee and biscuits and then sat down to visit. Ruthie wanted to sit in her lap, and she lifted her up. "When are you going to have a baby?" Ruthie asked, bringing stinging color into Angel's cheeks and a soft, mortified gasp from Elizabeth. "Ruth Ann Altman, you are never to ask things like that," her mother said, taking her from Angel's lap and setting her firmly on her feet. "Why not?" Ruth was not the least discomfited, and clearly not comprehending why her mother and Angel were. "Because it's very personal business, young lady." Ruth looked up at Angel, her eyes wide and surprised. "You mean you don't want to have a baby?" Miriam suppressed a laugh and took her little sister's hand. "I think we'll go out and swing a while," she told them. Elizabeth sat down again and fanned her hot face. "That child just blurts out whatever she's thinking," she said, and apologized. Angel wondered whether to tell her she couldn't have children, and decided against it. I came to ask for your help, Elizabeth said. The baby comes in December, and I'd like you to act as my midwife. Angel couldn't have been more stunned or aghast. Me? But, Elizabeth, I don't know the first thing about helping someone have a baby. I know what needs to be done. Miriam wants to help, but I don't think a young, impressionable girl like her should be attending a birthing. It might frighten her needlessly. Angel was silent a moment. I can't see that I would be any help at all. I've been through it before. I'll be able to tell you what to do. Back home, I had a midwife, but out here there's only John, and John simply will not do. She smiled slightly. He can birth a calf or foal, but he's perfectly useless when it comes to bringing his own children into the world. He falls to pieces the minute I show any pain, and, well, I can't go through the whole business without some discomfort now, can I? He fainted when Miriam was born. He did? Somehow she couldn't imagine the stoic John passing out over anything. He fell right on the floor by the bed, and there I was, helpless as a turtle on its back, and with my own work to handle. She laughed softly. He came round when it was all over.
Will it be very hard? Angel asked, worried already.
She remembered one girl who managed to conceal her pregnancy until it was too late to have an abortion. Isn't there a doctor in town? I suppose there might be, but by the time he arrived it would be all over. Ruth only took 4 hours to be born. This one may come even faster. Angel agreed reservedly to help when the time came.
If you're absolutely sure you want me to be the one...
I am, Elizabeth said, hugging her. She looked greatly relieved. Angel went out to Michael when the Altmans left. Leaning on the fence, she watched him shoe a horse.
Elizabeth wants me to help birth her baby.
She watched the lines deepen in his tanned cheeks as he smiled. Miriam told me she was going to ask you. She was a little annoyed that she wouldn't be the one helping bring her little brother or sister into the world.
Elizabeth was worried that Miriam might be shocked, she said. I, on the other hand, shouldn't be shocked by anything.
Michael heard the biting edge in her tone, an edge that had been missing for weeks. He glanced at her. Was it his mention of Miriam that did it? Or was she scared of this additional responsibility?
If there's trouble, I've untangled a few colts in my time.
She said John fainted.
Michael laughed as he drove the last nail in and cut off the end.
It's not funny, Michael. What if something goes wrong? There was a girl in the brothel back in New York who hid her pregnancy long enough so Duke couldn't force her to have an abortion. Sally talked him into letting her stay, but when her time came, she screamed. I could hear her through the walls. It was a Sunday afternoon and the place was busy and...
She looked at Michael's face as he straightened, and she stopped speaking. Oh, why had she brought up all that again? And what?
Never mind, she said, and turned away.
He came to the fence. Your past is part of you, and I love you, remember? Now what happened to the girl and her baby? Her throat closed tight, and she could hardly speak. Sally gagged her so she wouldn't disturb anyone. It took so long. All through the night and into the next day. She was sick for days afterwards, and the baby... Sally had kept the other girls away, but allowed Angel to come into the room with her to tend the mother and infant. The young prostitute was as white as death and silent, while beside her the baby whimpered constantly and was wrapped in a pink cloth. Angel wanted to pick the baby up, but Sally hastily shoved her away. Don't touch it, she whispered. Angel didn't understand why until Sally carefully unwrapped it. What about the child? Michael asked, pushing a loose strand of golden hair back from her pale face.
It was a little girl. She only lived a week, she said bleakly.
She didn't tell him that the baby was covered with sores or that she died without a name. The mother disappeared shortly afterward. When she asked Sally what happened to her, Sally said, "It's not for you to question what Duke does." An angel knew the girl was dead, fodder for rats in some dark, dirty alley. Just like Rab. Just like her if she didn't obey. She shuddered.
"Elizabeth has had 5 children, Amanda," Michael reminded her.
"Yes," she said, "and all of them healthy."
Michael watched the color slowly come back into her cheeks. He wondered what she had been thinking of, but he didn't ask. If she wanted to talk about it, she would. If not, he would respect her silence. But she needed reassurance. He sensed that.
"When a baby's time comes, there's nothing you can do to stop it."
She smiled up at him.
"You know all about this, too, I suppose?"
"Not from personal experience," he said. "Tess helped deliver a baby on the wagon train. She said she didn't have to do anything except make sure it didn't fall on the floor of the wagon. They're a little slippery when they arrive. When Elizabeth's time comes, I'll come along and hold John's hand."
Angel laughed, the tension leaving her. As long as Michael was with her, everything would be fine.
"Oh, by the way," Michael said, taking a packet from his pocket, "Miriam asked me to give this to you."
Angel had noticed Miriam leaning on the fence a long while, talking with Michael.
"What is it?" she asked, glancing at the neat handwriting she couldn't read. Duke had seen no reason to teach her.
"Seeds for a summer flower garden."
As spring warmth turned into summer heat, Angel learned she had her mother's gift for growing things. The flower bed she had laid out around the house became a grand profusion of color. She filled the pitcher daily with pink phlox, yellow yarrow, red lamb's ear, purple delphinium, and white hollyhocks. Blue flax and pristine daisies graced the mantel. But even more than the pleasure she took from the flowers was the pride she felt when she looked out at the cornfield. She could scarcely believe that the small, shriveled kernels Michael had given her to plant had become stalks taller than he. She walked the rows, touching the towering plants and seeing the developing ears of corn. Had she really helped make this happen?
"Amanda, where are you?"
Michael called. Laughing, she stood on tiptoe.
"Over here," she called back, and then ran down the row to hide.
"All right," he said, laughing. "Where did you go?"
She whistled at him from her hiding place. She and Ruthie had played hide-and-seek in the rows the day before, and she was in a joyous mood today, ready to tease Michael.
"What do I get if I find you?"
"What have you got in mind?"
"Oh, a little of this and that."
He reached through a row and almost caught hold of her skirt. Laughing, she escaped again. He caught up with her at the end of the row, but she eluded him again and disappeared into the greenery. She ducked into a row and put her foot out as he passed, tripping him. Laughing, she raced back the other way.
"I'm never going to get that fence repaired," he said, coming after her.
He had just caught her when someone called to them. Michael chuckled.
"It's Miriam again, wanting to know if Mandy can come out and play."
Miriam looked distraught when she reached them, her eyes red-rimmed from crying.
"What's happened?" Angel asked in alarm. "Is it your mother?"
"Mama's fine. Everyone's fine," Miriam said, giving her a weak smile.
"Michael, I need to speak with you about something. Please, it's important."
"Of course."
Miriam took Angel's hand and squeezed it.
"Thanks," she said. "I won't keep him long."
Angel knew she was dismissed.
"Come into the house when you're finished. I'll fix some coffee."
She watched from the window as Miriam and Michael talked together in the yard. Miriam was crying. Michael touched her shoulder, and Miriam went into his arms. Angel's stomach dropped at the sight of him holding her.
A dull pain spread across her chest as she watched him stroke the girl's back and say something to her. Miriam drew back slightly and shook her head. He tipped her chin and said something more to her. She talked for a long time, and Michael stood listening. When she finished, he said something briefly. She put her arms around his neck and kissed his cheek. Then she headed for home. Michael stood watching her for a long moment. He rubbed the back of his neck and shook his head. Then he headed for the fence where he had been working earlier. Angel waited for him to bring up what Miriam said when he came in for supper, but he didn't. Instead, he talked about how the work was going on the corral and what he would be doing in the afternoon. If Miriam had told him something in trust, Angel knew he wouldn't break it. When he came in at the end of the day, he was thoughtful. He watched her clear the dishes. "You're very quiet," he said, coming up behind her and putting his hands around her waist as she poured hot water over the dinner dishes. He brushed her braid aside and kissed her neck. "What are you worrying about, Elizabeth?"
"Miriam."
She felt his hands loosen. Turning, she looked up at him.
"And you?"
When he blinked and said nothing, she brushed past him. He caught her and turned her firmly around to face him.
"You have no need to be jealous, though I suppose I'd be grinding my teeth if Paul came round and asked to talk with you privately."
"That's not likely to happen, is it?"
"No, I suppose not." He wished he had left Paul out of it. "The point is, I love you."
"And you're not in the least tempted by a girl who worships the ground you walk on?"
"No," he said, not denying Miriam's affection, "but I'm more a big brother to her than anything else."
Angel felt petty. She loved Miriam dearly, but seeing them together had hurt. She looked up into Michael's eyes again and couldn't doubt he loved her. He made her weak with it. Relaxing, she gave him a rueful smile.
"Is she all right? What's wrong?"
"She's unhappy. She knows what she wants, a husband and children of her own, but she isn't sure how to get it, so she wanted a man's opinion."
"Well, I'm glad she didn't go to Paul," she said before she thought better of it.
She turned back to the dishes. Paul would take a sweet, innocent girl like Miriam apart with his mockery. Michael was silent. She glanced back at him and knew she shouldn't have said anything against his friend.
"I'm sorry, it's just that..."
She shrugged. "She needs a husband."
"Yes," she agreed. "But he's going to have to be something very, very special."
His mouth curved. "You love her, don't you?"
"She's the closest thing to a sister I'll ever have. Maybe that's why it hurt when I saw the two of you holding on to one another."
"I don't hold her the same way I hold you. Want to see the difference?"
Breathless and laughing, she pushed free.
"You're all soggy now. Go read so I can finish my work."
He took the Bible down and sat before the fire with the book resting in his lap. He bowed his head, and Angel knew he was praying. It was a habit of his, and she no longer taunted him about it. That great black book was almost falling apart, but he looked upon it as something bound in gold and containing priceless jewels inside. He never read it without praying first. He told her once that he didn't read until his mind was open enough to receive. She didn't know what he was talking about. Sometimes his words, though plain English, made no sense to her at all. And then he would say something wonderful that filled her with warmth and dawning light. She was the blackest night, and he was the starlight piercing it, creating an unfolding pattern in her life. She finished her chores and sat beside him. He was still silent. She put her head back, listening to the crackling fire, and waited. When he finally read, she was drowsy and content. His rich, warm voice was like dark taffy, but what he read surprised her. It was the story of a bride and groom and their passion for one another. He read for a long time. Michael put the Bible back on the mantel and placed another log on the fire. It would burn through the night and keep the cabin warm. "Why would a virgin bride play the harlot for her husband?" Angel asked, perplexed. Michael glanced back. He thought she was sleeping.
She wasn't.
Yes, she was. She danced for him, and he was looking at her body, from the feet up. In the beginning, he was looking into her eyes.
He was amazed she had listened so carefully. He took joy in her body, as she wanted him to, and she danced to arouse and please him.
And your God says it's all right to entice a man?
It's all right to entice your husband.
Her expression clouded.
She hadn't meant just any man, but he was well aware of how well trained she was at enticement.
What if they think it's enticement just because of the way you look?
Michael nudged the log further back with his boot. Men are always going to stare at you, Amanda. You're beautiful. There's nothing you can do about that.
Even John Altman had stared at her in the beginning. And Paul. Sometimes Michael wondered what went through Paul's mind when he saw her. Did it flash back to what happened between them on the way to paradise? He pushed the disturbing thoughts away. Dwelling on them raised doubts that tormented him.
"Does it bother you?" she asked.
"What?"
"When men stare at me."
"Sometimes," he admitted.
"When they're looking at you like an object and not a human being with feelings." His mouth tipped ruefully.
"Or a wife in love with her husband."
She turned the wedding ring on her finger. "They never look at my hands, Michael."
"Maybe we should put the ring in your nose."
Glancing up, she saw his teasing smile and laughed.
"Yes, or a large one around my neck. Maybe that would keep them away."
A long time later, as Michael lay sleeping beside her, Angel listened to the night breeze stirring the wind chimes outside the window. The ever-changing melodies were soothing. The new hay smelled sweet beneath her, sweeter still because it was partly due to her labor that it was there. She and Michael had harvested the hay together. What grueling work! She had been so fascinated watching Michael swing the great scythe in wide, smooth strokes, dropping the golden grasses. She raked it into piles, and they pitched it into the back of the wagon to be taken and stored in the barn. The animals would have hay through the cold winter months. Everything Michael did had a purpose. She thought of her own life and how meaningless and miserable it had been before him. Her very reason to be alive now depended on him. And Michael depended on the earth, the rains, the warmth of the sun. And his God. Especially his God. "I'd be dead by now if Michael hadn't come back for me. I'd be rotting in a shallow, unmarked grave." She was consumed with gratitude and filled with an aching humility that this man loved her. Why, of all the other women of the world, had he chosen her? She was so undeserving. It was inconceivable. "But I am glad, so glad he did. And I'll never again do anything to make him sorry. Oh God, I swear." A sweet fragrance filled the darkened cabin, a fragrance that defied definition. She filled her lungs with it, so heady and wonderful. What was it? Where did it come from? Her mind whirled with words and phrases Michael had read to her over the past weeks, and even before that. Words she thought she had never heard, but had somehow found their way into the deepest part of her, somewhere inside, a place she'd been unable to close off. And then a still, quiet voice filled the room.
"I am."
Angel sat up abruptly, eyes wide open. She looked around the cabin, but there was no one there other than Michael, who lay sleeping deeply beside her. Who had spoken? She felt fear sweep through her, and she trembled with it. Then it was gone, washed away, and she was calm again, her skin tingling strangely. "There is nothing," she whispered. "Nothing." She awaited an answer, not moving. But no answer came. No voice filled the stillness. Angel lay down slowly and curled as tightly against Michael as she could. Chapter 26. From Shakespeare. Give sorrow words, the grief that does not speak. September came swiftly, and the corn was ready for harvesting. Michael drove the wagon between the rows and left it there. He and Angel broke the ears from the stalks and tossed them against the bangboard so they dropped into the wagon bed. Soon the corn crib was full. The Altmans gladly came to help shuck corn. It was a good excuse to get together and have some fun. They all sang songs, told stories, and laughed while working. Angel's hands blistered, and she cut them on the shucks, but she had never been happier in her life. The mound of golden ears grew about her, and she felt a sense of pride in having a part in it. There was more than enough for seed next year, and their own supply for cornmeal was replenished, as well as having plenty to sell at market. When the shucking was finished, Elizabeth sat in the shade and sipped herbal tea Angel brought to her. She was rounding nicely, her cheeks glowing with healthy color. Angel had never seen her look so well or lively. "Do you want to feel the baby kick?" Elizabeth asked, and took Angel's hand. She placed it on her swollen belly. "There. Did you feel that, Amanda?" Angel laughed, amazed. "John wants another boy," Elizabeth said. Angel grew wistful as they talked. Elizabeth patted her hand. "Your time will come. You're young." Angel didn't reply. Michael and Miriam walked up the hill together to see about little Ruth, who was swinging. Elizabeth watched them with a faint frown. "She quotes Michael like gospel. I've been so hoping she would fall in love with Paul." "Paul?" Angel looked at her in surprise. "He's young and strong and very good-looking. He works hard on that place of his, and he'll make something of himself. I asked Miriam what she thought of him, and all she would say is he told her his wife was very pretty, and he missed her. He hardly looks at her when he comes over to help John." She sighed. "I suppose he's still grieving. Too much so to notice a pretty young girl just the right age for him, and Miriam is—" She stopped as she realized what she was about to say. "In love with Michael," Angel said. Elizabeth blushed. "She's never said so." "She doesn't have to, does she?" Elizabeth wondered what damage she had done with her wandering thoughts and tongue. Sometimes she spoke with as little wisdom and tact as her children. Why hadn't she kept silent about her concerns? Amanda was too easy to talk to. "I've wondered," she admitted, seeing no way to avert the subject now. She wondered especially today, watching Miriam walk away with Michael, and seeing how her daughter hung on his every word. Was Michael aware of her affection? How could he not be? Miriam never could hide anything. Elizabeth touched Angel's hand. "Miriam would never do anything about those feelings, even if she does have them for Michael. She adores you, and she's a good girl. She's no fool, Amanda." "Of course not." Angel watched Michael come down the hill with her friend, and thought they looked very good together. They both had dark hair and were beautifully made. They had so much in common. They both believed in the same God. They loved the land. They both embraced life with zeal and joy. They gave their love without condition. She saw Miriam loop her arm through Michael's and laugh up at him in easy camaraderie. Angel's heart contracted with a sharp stab of jealousy, but it was quickly gone, overcome by an overwhelming sadness. She watched Miriam's face carefully as they came closer. Elizabeth was dismayed, seeing how Angel watched her daughter. "I've been a fool," she said miserably, sure she had destroyed her daughter's friendship. "I should never have said anything." "I'm glad you did." Elizabeth took her hand tightly. "Amanda, Michael loves you very much." "I know," Angel said, smiling bleakly. "What good would it ever do him?" "And so does Miriam." Angel saw how distressed Elizabeth was and put her hand over hers. "I know that too, Elizabeth. You needn't worry." Next to Michael and Ruthie, she loved Miriam better than anyone in the world. Not that she didn't also love Elizabeth. What she felt was too consuming to share. Elizabeth's eyes filled with tears. "And now I've ruined your trust in her." "Not at all." Oddly, Angel knew her reassurance was true. She felt secure in Michael's love. But what of Miriam? Even more unsettling, what of Michael's dreams? Angel tried to push the disturbing thoughts away. "Michael knew what he was getting. He said so himself. So it's not my fault if he doesn't get everything he wanted. Like children." Angel looked at Elizabeth's abdomen and then turned her head away, pretending the grief inside her didn't exist. Michael went to visit with Paul and was gone most of the next day. Angel wondered what he had gone to talk about and what Paul would have to say to him. She was working in the garden when Michael returned. She made no move to go out to meet him. He swung down from his horse and strode toward her purposefully. Putting his hand on the support post, he swung over the gate and caught hold of her. Pulling her into his arms, he kissed her thoroughly. When she was breathless, he relaxed his hold and grinned down at her. "Does that set your mind at ease?" She laughed and embraced him, relief and joy obliterating all the anxiety of the long day without him. How the mind could torment. She went into the cabin to see to dinner while he saw to his horse. When he came in, she smiled. "Is everything all right with Paul?" "No," he said grimly, hands shoved into his pockets as he leaned against the mantel and watched her. "Something's eating at him, and he won't talk about it. We're going to drive into town tomorrow and sell some of our produce." Her heart sank at the thought of his being away another day, but she said nothing. "I'll see to the stock in the morning, and you can spend the day with the Altmans," he said. "Elizabeth's putting up applesauce." Angel turned to look at him. "Did you see Miriam?" "Yes." His expression was inscrutable. "What a mess," he said almost to himself. She didn't ask him anything more. Paul came early. Michael was just finishing his coffee. When he stood, he put a firm hand on Paul's shoulder, pushing him down into the seat again. "Stay put. Have some coffee while I see to the stock. The wagon's already loaded. I'll give a holler when I'm ready to hitch up. We'll swing by your place to pick up your crates, and then be on our way." Paul's face was stiff, and his gaze flickered coldly to Angel when Michael went out the door. "Was it your idea we have this time alone together?"
"No.
I suppose Michael hopes we'll work out our differences." Paul drank his coffee in silence, his shoulders rigid. She looked at him. "Have you eaten this morning? There's some mush." "No thanks," he said curtly. He looked up at her sardonically. "I thought you'd be long gone by now." It was clear he wished it so.
Would you like some more coffee?
So polite, so proper. Anyone would think you were raised to be a farmer's wife.
I am a farmer's wife, Paul, she said quietly.
No, you're a good actress. You're going through all the motions, but inside you're nowhere near what a farmer's wife should be. His hand whitened on the mug. Don't you think Michael knows the difference every time he talks to Miriam Altman?
She showed no sign that his words had cut deeply. He loves me.
He loves you all right, he said, and his eyes swept her body up and down in a telling way. You know how that is.
How could Michael love this man like a brother? She tried to see something in him, some trace of kindness and humanity, but all she could see was his cold hatred.
Are you always going to hate me for what you did, Paul? Are you never going to forget?
Paul shoved the mug away and scraped the chair back. His face was red, his eyes blazing.
You're blaming me for what happened? Did I drag you off that wagon? Did I rape you? You'd like to think it was my fault, wouldn't you?
He went out the door.
Angel didn't move from where she stood. She should have kept silent. She knew she had no defense.
Michael stepped in briefly to kiss her goodbye.
I'll come by the Altmans on my way home. Stay there, and we can ride home together.
Ruthie ran to meet Angel as she came across the meadow.
Paul said we could pick all his apples, she said, as she was scooped up and perched on Angel's hip. Mama's going to make applesauce. I love applesauce, don't you?
Miriam was in the doorway, looking pretty in a blue gingham dress and white apron. She was smiling.
We're being put to work, she said, and hugged Angel.
They took a handcart and walked the mile to the apple tree. While they picked the fruit, Miriam pointed out all the work Paul had done on his place.
He has a good crop of pumpkins coming, and he had a good crop of corn. We helped him shuck it a few days ago.
When they returned to the Altman's cabin, they spent the rest of the morning peeling and coring apples and cutting them in pieces to cook. Elizabeth added spices as she stirred, and the sweet smell filled the cabin. While the pot simmered, she made up a picnic basket and sent them off.
"The boys are already with your father, and I'll have the cabin to myself for a nap," she said, when Miriam asked if she would be all right.
Ruth and Leah went with Miriam and Angel. The two younger girls waded in the cool water of the stream while Angel sat on the bank and sipped at her toes through the sand. Miriam lay back, arms spread, and drank in the sun's warmth.
"Sometimes I miss home," she said.
She talked about the farm and the neighbors they'd had and the gatherings. She talked about the long journey west. She remembered one funny incident after another, and Angel laughed with her. Miriam made a grueling 2,000-mile trek sound like a pleasure trip.
"Tell me about the ship," Miriam said, rolling onto her stomach and propping her head up. "Were there many women aboard?"
"Two others besides myself. My quarters weren't much bigger than a back house, and it was so cold. I wore as much clothing as I could, and it still didn't help. Going around the Horn was the nearest you can get to hell. I thought I'd die of seasickness."
"What did you do when you got to San Francisco?"
"Froze and nearly starved."
She clasped her knees and looked at the two little girls in the stream.
"Then I started working again."
She sighed.
"Miriam, I don't have many funny stories to tell, and the ones I do have aren't fit for you to hear."
Miriam sat up Indian fashion.
"I'm not a child, you know. You could tell me something of what it was like."
"Obscene."
"Then why didn't you run away?"
Was there faint accusation in that question?
Should she tell Miriam what it was like to be 8 years old and locked in a room and know that only two people had a key, a madam who brought food and replaced the chamber pot, and Duke?
Should she tell her the disastrous outcome when she ran away with Johnny?
I tried, Miriam, she said simply, and left it at that.
But men wanted you. Men fell in love with you. Just once, I'd like to walk down a street and have heads turn as I went by.
No, you wouldn't.
Miriam's eyes teared. Just once, I'd like to be wanted by a man.
Do you really think so?
What if it was a stranger, and he just paid someone for you, and you had to do whatever he wanted, no matter how degrading? What if he was ugly? What if he hadn't bathed in a month? What if he liked to play rough? Would you think that was romantic?
She hadn't meant to speak so harshly. She was shaking.
Miriam's face was ashen.
Is that what it was like?
Worse, Angel said. I wish I'd never known another man before Michael.
Miriam took her hand and didn't ask any more questions. Michael arrived at dusk. Miriam was the first one out the door to greet him.
I thought Paul was coming back with you.
Michael jumped down. He decided to stay in town for a day or two.
Just like a man, Miriam said, but her gaiety was gone.
Elizabeth insisted he and Angel stay for dinner. Miriam sat on the other side of Michael and scarcely said a word through the meal. Her food was hardly touched. Angel saw Michael put her hand over hers briefly and whisper something to her. Miriam's eyes filled with tears, and she excused herself quickly and left the table.
"What's gotten into her lately?" John said, perplexed.
"Just leave it be, John." Elizabeth glanced between Angel and Michael, and then passed a bowl of squash. Michael was pensive on the wagon ride home. He took Angel's hand and held it tightly.
"What I wouldn't do for a little wisdom right now," he said. "What'd Paul say to you this morning?"
"He was surprised I was still around," she said, smiling to make him think it hadn't hurt.
Michael wasn't fooled. "I brought you something from town."
When they reached home, he took the items out of the back and handed them to her. She didn't know what they were at first, just thorned sticks partially bound in burlap.
"Rose bushes. The man swore they're red, but we'll find out for ourselves come spring. I'll plant them first thing in the morning. Just tell me where you want them."
Angel remembered the scent of roses drifting in a sunny parlor.
"One right under the window," she said, "and the other by the front door."
When an image of her mother in a nightgown, kneeling in the moonlit garden, flashed in her mind, she quickly pushed it away. Thanksgiving approached quickly, and Elizabeth grew so large, Angel thought she looked ready to burst. She and Miriam took over the preparations for the holiday celebration, while Elizabeth watched and advised. When the day came, the table was laden with stuffed and roasted pheasant, creamed carrots and peas, potatoes and candied nuts. John had purchased a cow, and pitchers of milk sat on both ends of the table. Angel hadn't had a glass of milk in months, and this delicacy drew her more readily than all the others she had helped to cook.
"Paul went to town to celebrate," Miriam said, little inflection in her tone. "He said the other day he's thinking of going back to the streams come spring."
"There's a stream right near his house," Leah said.
Jacob gave his sister a contemptuous look. "Not with gold in it, dummy."
"That will do, Jacob," Elizabeth chided him as she set a rhubarb pie on the table. Miriam put pumpkin at the other end. When everyone was finished, the children quickly scattered before they could be drafted into kitchen duty. John and Michael went outside so John could smoke his pipe. The aroma made Elizabeth sick in her condition. Miriam went to the well for water. Elizabeth sank wearily into a chair and rested her hand on her protruding belly. "I swear this child is carving his initials on the walls already."
"How long to go?"
Angel asked, scraping leftovers from plates and putting them into the washpan on the table.
"Too long," Elizabeth smiled. "It takes John and Miriam to get me out of bed in the morning."
Angel poured a kettle of hot water over the dirty dishes. Glancing at Elizabeth, she saw the poor woman was exhausted and half asleep. Drying her hands, she went to her and took her hand.
"Elizabeth, you should lie down and rest."
She helped her up and covered her with a quilt when she lay down on the bed in the second room. She was asleep almost immediately. Angel stood by the bed for a long moment. Elizabeth was curled on her side, her knees drawn up, and her hand resting protectively on her unborn child. An embrace. Angel looked down at her own flat stomach and spread her hands there. Her eyes burned, and she bit her lip. Dropping her hands to her sides, she turned away and saw Miriam standing in the doorway. Miriam smiled wistfully.
"I've wondered myself what it would be like. It's a woman's reason for being, isn't it? Our divine privilege, to bring new life into the world and nurture it."
She smiled at Angel.
"Sometimes I can hardly wait."
Angel saw the tears Miriam tried to hide. After all, what good was divine privilege to a virgin girl? Or a barren woman? Chapter 27. From Proverbs, Chapter 19, Verse 21. Many are the plans in a man's heart, but it is the Lord's purpose that prevails. Before Michael went hunting, he brought several heavy sacks of dried corn into the cabin so Angel could shell it. She sat before the crackling fire and rubbed the cobs together until a few rows gave way and the rest of the kernels could be easily separated. Some fell onto her lap. Setting the bare cob aside, she picked up a kernel. Smiling, she rolled its hard shape between her fingers. "You have to die to be reborn." She raised her head, listening intently. Her heart beat wildly, but the only sounds around her were the chimes stirring in the wind. She looked down at the dry, partially shriveled kernel in her palm. It was like the many she had planted last spring, and out of which the forest of green had sprung. She tossed the kernel into the basket with the others and brushed the rest from her skirt. Perhaps she was a little mad after all. The old voices seldom came anymore, but now there was this new one, quiet and still, making no sense at all. From death comes life? Impossible. But there at her feet was the basket of seed corn. She frowned slightly. Bending, she sifted her hands through it. She clenched two handfuls.
So what did it mean?
"Amanda," Miriam gasped, bursting into the cabin. "It's Mama's time." Angel threw on her shawl and started out the door. Laughing, Miriam halted her.
"You don't want to come back to a burned-down house, do you?"
Angel grabbed a sack of dried corn and dragged it well away from the fireplace. Angel hurriedly lifted the seed corn to the table and swung the other sack near the bed. They ran most of the way.
"Oh," Miriam said, "I didn't even think to tell Michael."
"He'll know," Angel said, walking fast to catch her breath before she raised her skirts and ran again. Heaving for breath, Angel plunged into the Altman cabin, Miriam on her heels. Elizabeth sat calmly before the fire, stitching on a shirt. The children glanced up from their work. They were sitting calmly around the table, doing lessons. Only John was agitated and came out of his chair like a shot. "Thank God," he said, taking Angel's shawl quickly and tossing it in the direction of the wall hook. He lowered his voice. "Her pains are close together, but I can't get her to go in and lie down. She says she has mending to do."
"I'm almost finished, John," Elizabeth said.
She set one shirt aside and took up another. She went very still, and her face tightened in silent concentration. Angel stared at her, watching for signs of agony, waiting for a blood-curdling scream. Elizabeth closed her eyes for a long moment, and then let out a soft sigh, and began working again. The children scarcely noticed until their father groaned.
"Lizzie, go to bed."
"When I'm finished, John."
"Now," he boomed so abruptly, Angel jumped. She had never heard John Altman use such a tone on anyone in his family.
Elizabeth raised her head with dignity. "Leave me be, John. Go feed the horses or chop wood. Go muck out a stable. Go shoot something for dinner. But don't bother me right now."
She said it all in such a calm voice, Angel almost laughed.
John tossed up his hands and stormed out of the cabin, muttering about women.
"Bar the door, Andrew."
"Mama?
He'll come right back in if you don't," Elizabeth said with an amused smile. The children laughed and went on with what they were doing.
Miriam was tense and clearly worried. Several more panes came, and Elizabeth stitched madly. She knotted the thread and snipped it. Another contraction came while she was folding the shirt, and Miriam was growing more pale. She looked frantically to Angel, but Angel intended to wait on Elizabeth's pleasure. If she wanted to sit there and have the baby in the chair, that was her business. When the contraction lengthened, Angel bent down and put her hand firmly on Elizabeth's knee.
"How can I help you?" she said with more steadiness than she felt.
Elizabeth said nothing, her hand clenched white on the arm of the chair. Finally, she let out a gusty breath and took Angel's hand.
"Help me to the bedroom," she said softly. "Miriam, see to the children and your father."
"Yes, Mama."
"And we'll need plenty of hot water. Jacob can fetch it, and cloths. Leah, they're in the trunk. We'll need the ball of twine in the cabinet. Ruthie, you get that for me, will you, dear?"
"Yes, Mama."
The children scattered to do her bidding. Angel closed the door quietly behind her. Elizabeth sat down carefully on the edge of the bed and began to unbutton her dress. She needed help in removing it, and had but a thin shift on beneath.
"It's coming now," she said. "My water broke when I went to the back house this morning."
She laughed softly. "I was afraid for a moment that the child would drop right down into that hole." She took Angel's hand.
"Don't look so worried. Everything is fine."
She drew in her breath sharply, her hand tightening. Perspiration beaded on her brow.
"That was a good one," she said finally.
Miriam entered the bedroom with a pitcher of water and a pan full of cloths.
"Papa is bringing more water. Two buckets besides Jacob's. We've got the pot over the fire."
Elizabeth's eyes twinkled.
"I suppose your papa thinks a nice warm bath would solve everything."
She kissed Miriam's cheek.
"Thank you, sweetheart. I'm depending on you to take care of things. Leah was having trouble with her arithmetic, and Jacob needs to practice his letters."
The pains came more quickly and lasted longer. Elizabeth made no sound, but Angel saw the strain she was under. She was pale and sweating profusely. Wringing out a cool cloth, Angel bathed her face. Miriam peered in an hour later.
"Michael's here."
Angel let out a sigh of relief, and Elizabeth smiled.
"You're doing just fine, Amanda."
Blushing, Angel laughed. Elizabeth had little to say over the next hour, and Angel respected her silence. She stroked her tenderly and held her hand when the pains came. When Elizabeth relaxed, she wrung out the cloth and dabbed her brow.
"Won't be long now," Elizabeth said, following one pain that had rolled right into the next.
She moaned this time, her hand clamping white on the headboard. "Oh, I didn't think it would take this long.